Yeah, keep going, man. Keep going, man. What you call an icon living? Start a regular living, Miss Fish just did it. Boom. Not a long cup of 5 minutes. Boom. We are too hot in the business.
Boom. Playing those mind games.
Nah. Okay, let's actually start. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Temporary Uncles Podcast. We are your uncles for the next, whatever, like, 50 to an hour. I'm Nick, and this is Ben.
I'm still the realist.
Still? You're making a reference to something that's probably not in the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job.
Because Nick had sent me an album just recently.
Yeah.
He'd sent me an album by one of the foremost artists of our age.
One that I was honestly surprised at, like, I actually quite liked it. I'm not saying it's a masterpiece of rap, but I'm saying that I quite liked it when I listened to it.
Are you more surprised that I liked it?
I am. I actually didn't know that you liked it because you kept shitting on it as we were talking about it.
Well, I wasn't... Yeah, but with any piece, I'll usually start off with the, you know, I thought it was really good on the whole. I thought, for the most part, it was great. And then I'll find 1,000 things wrong with it. But it keep in the background that I said that I enjoyed it. Overall, okay. I thought the instrumentation was good. I liked the music of it.
Yeah.
I think that Jaden Smith's voice gets a little tiresome at times. That's just the sound that comes out of his face. I can't help that.
So, yes, it is by Jaden Smith, because you kind of just glazed over that, where we were kind of building to the fact that it was supposed to be by Jaden Smith, and then you just glazed over the fact that it was by him.
There was all this suspense we're talking held about, up on the floor, we're talking and I pulled about, the carpet out from under
Yes, exactly. We're talking about Sire, the first album by young American... rapper/actor.
Is this really his first effort?
Jaden Smith. Yes, this is his first ever album. This is his rapping debut.
Had he released a single or anything?
He'd probably released some songs, maybe an EP or so. But
he'd rapped with the Biebs.
Yeah, but this is his first actual album.
Canada's foremost artistic effort.
Really?
Yes.
You're going with that over, say, Rush or Jim Carrey.
No, Jim Carrey hasn't got shit on Justin Bieber.
Oh, God.
No, yeah, disregard that.
Yeah, yeah, just imagine...
Cut that.
Yeah. You want me to cut that? You don't want me to keep in the bit where you say that Justin Bieber is Canada's most foremost musical effort?
Keep in the bit where I say that I touched myself to Justin Bieber. What you should do is you should take that bit and then just insert it at some point later in the podcast for no reason.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, you should keep this and then bring it back. So, the reason why I decided to spruik myself as being the most genuine person around is because I noticed that there are a lot of young rappers that are obsessed with being the realist or with saying that they are the most real or at least...
Or spitting the truth.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like...
Finna spit the truth, or at least they have enough business savvy
always,
to realize that their audience wants them to be real.
Yeah, you know, they're finna work, man.
The most real gangsters produce fine production.
Well, yeah, see, like, rap is such a weird, like, genre, because there's the people who make art rap, people like Childish Gambino or Kendrick Lamar or Tyler, the Creator.
That are rich.
They're rich and they can afford doing really good production, but they can also, like, write really good lyrics and stuff. Whereas Jaden Smith, I think it's a good effort for his first album.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, I am a kind of looking forward to hearing like what he does in the future.
Like as someone who's not a connoisseur of the hip hop.
Yeah.
I would say that it was pretty good.
And to be honest, this is actually my introduction into Jaden Smith as an artist, because I don't think I've actually seen any movies with Jaden Smith in them. I haven't seen The Karate Kid.
I've seen The Karate Kid.
I haven't seen After Earth. I haven't seen The Pursuit of Happiness, so, yeah.
Karate Kid was alright.
I've seen the original Karate Kid. With Ralph Macchio.
Mr. Macchio.
And Mr. Miyagi. That's actually about karate.
That movie is true. In fact, in The Karate Kid, they introduce it with saying, I want to teach you Kung Fu. So they acknowledge within the first 20 minutes of the film that this is not a film about karate.
Why not just call it Kung Fu Panda? It's about a... I don't fucking know.
I was going to say something terrible.
Terribly racist?
I don't want it to be on...
You don't want it to be recorded?
No.
I'm going to say the N-word like you always do?
What do you mean like I always do?
Don't try to lie to the people listening to this. You say the N-word all the time,
Look,
Ben.
I might be the realist, but I don't use that word.
Don't lie to me, Ben.
I'm not. You can't tell anyone about me being a huge racist. I just stink, man.
You do. You smell really bad.
Oh! I'm sweaty.
That's why the window's open.
I feel like Aaron Hansen. This is how Aaron feels.
Yeah. Anyway, continue with what you were saying about the realist
so
people.
So, like, hip-hop comes from a place where there were people that didn't have a lot of money, and they purchased equipment that allowed them to make music.
SoundCloud rappers and shit. Like, that's what they're called. They're called SoundCloud rappers.
Yeah. I was thinking more about, like, in the 80s when hip-hop first existed. So, it came out of a place where there weren't a lot of affluent rappers, and they made music because
Rap wasn't considered an art form back then.
Reasonably cheap to do... And they could do a lot of interesting things with sampling, and so it was considered
electronic music as well.
Yeah, so you could have like this a quote unquote ghetto art form. But then as rap became more popular and you could become extremely rich with it, it was important to distinguish yourself as being
the realist.
As being real, as being the realist, because you could be some really sheltered white kid from New Jersey and still make rap. But you can, with the lyrics that actually reference black stuff. But rap came from a place where it was about the struggle and about sort of lifting yourself up off the streets. But there's still, just because
Tyler the Creator makes money off of it doesn't mean he can't actually rap about that kind of stuff. Because he experienced it before he was a famous rapper.
Yeah, no, but the fact that there was this origin of rap and then it got to a point where anyone could and did make rap and you could be completely removed from the struggle, as it were, and still talk about it.
Yeah.
People felt, okay, I need to consume some rap which actually comes from a place, a genuine place.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the audience wants this. And so if you're a young upcoming rapper and perhaps raised in a really rich household, you've got to argue about why you are the realist. Because you might be considered, oh, this guy's rich, this guy's not...
Are you referring to Jaden Christopher Siah Smith now?
A little bit, because he does talk about being the realist when he may not be.
Well, the thing is...
He may have had a struggle, but I'm sure that the struggle of, say, the Sugar Hill Gang or something probably isn't the same... As Mr. Smith.
The thing is that the album's more about his coming of age as an adult rather than his struggle with the police or growing up in the hood or whatever.
But it's also his struggle, air quotes, with trying to separate
himself from his father's fame,
And I think that's a really valid statement to make because he comes from a place of extreme fame and wealth, and his dad is and probably will continue to be a much larger figure than
he is. And his dad is the Fresh Prince, so he was also a rapper back in the day. So
exactly, and he was a really big thing because he was this clean rapper. Mm. He was a really distinct entity
back, and it was also in the time when Eminem was famous, and he was a rapper who, despite growing up white, also had a struggle. And that's where he made it into his rap music, and that's why he's one of the more valid white rappers out there.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with Mr. Mathers, aside from his mother's pasta.
He grew up quite poor, so he had quite a struggle growing up, and now he's one of the most famous rappers out there. So yeah.
I just thought it was interesting that I've heard so many people refer to themselves as being the realist, and in fact, our friend Igloo Australia, who does talk about being a multitude of things. Talk about being ghetto, about being hood, about being fancy, about being the realist.
She's actually like not.
No, she's in fact
none
of those
things. And another reason that makes her rap bad is the fact that she can't rap.
Yeah.
She's not good at it.
Mm. It's the fact that she doesn't inhabit any of those things that she claims to be. And she has
absolutely no self-awareness whatsoever.
So there is an audience that says, look, I need to know that the person that I'm listening to is going to deliver genuine. Some funky fresh rhymes and isn't coming from a place that is so far removed from what I'm looking for. Because I think that a lot of people listen to a certain style of music because they want something specific.
I mean, you can always listen to rap and just like it because of he's really good at rhyming and rapping, or like the production of the music's really good. You don't actually really have to pay attention to the lyrics.
Yeah, to just like the aesthetic of it.
Well, exactly. That was the main reason why I actually listened to Sia by Jaden Smith, is because I found the song Icon while I was just... Because I kind of went on, okay, I'm going to listen to some more rap that I haven't actually listened to before. I listened to some Rich Chigga. I listened to a bit of Tyler, the Creator, the stuff that I hadn't listened to. And then I found, in the suggested videos, I found Jaden Smith's Icon. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this a go.
Yeah.
Just see if it's any good. And I liked it. The music video is well shot. He's actually not that bad a dancer with his feet. His costume's a bit questionable, but the music video it looks nice because it's shot in like the sunrise or sunset or something. The sky's all pink and stuff.
Well, there's a lyric about that, about being in the sunset.
So, well, that's one of the things I was going to get to with my interpretation of the album Sire.
In the shadow of Will.
Yeah. The music video and the song actually like caught me off guard, and the fact that, oh, surprisingly, I actually enjoy this. This is quite good.
It's oddly good.
And so, yeah, and so I saw, okay, this is a single off of his new album. So like a few days later, I went, okay, I'm going to listen to the actual album that this comes from. And I quite liked it. I was like, this is actually some good stuff. This reminds me of when I first listened to Childish Gambino's Because the Internet. And that was back in the days where I didn't listen to quite a bit of rap. Yeah. So it was like my introduction to this form of rap called art rap, which is, you know, it's both good production, it's good rapping and stuff, but also nice production, and it's trying to tell a story. Like Sire itself is art rap in that it's a concept album as well.
Yeah,
it's not just a collection of good songs. It's also a concept album. It's telling a story of this rapper called Sire. Which is, you know, one of his middle names, but that's not, like, the reason why it's called Sire, I think. But the character of Sire is, like, a rapper who got shot by his ex-girlfriend, and now he's stuck in limbo. And okay. I think some... So
is that canon, or is that part of your interpretation?
Well, I think it's part canon and part of my interpretation. There are lyrics that say he got shot by his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
And there are lyrics stating that he's in limbo, he's in the eternal sunset. But the thing about this album is that before it was released, it was actually going to be called Sire, A Beautiful Confusion. So, which is why I'm thinking, oh, okay, maybe some of this confusing material is intentional. So maybe the fact that some of the songs come from a point of view where he is alive. Some of the songs come from a point of view where he is dead. Some of the songs are from Jaden's point of view. Some of the songs are from Sire's point of view. Some of the songs are from no one's point of view. Some of the songs are from everyone's point of view. And I think it's deliberately... like that. It's like a play with multiple characters being played by Jaden Smith.
Hmm.
My least favorite song is obviously George Jeff, just because it just... I'm not a big fan of it. It just kind of doesn't... The rhymes don't really link with the music that well, and it's kind of... And I mean, there might be a context to the song that I'm missing, but it's just like, production-wise, I'm not a big fan of George Jeff. I like the title, George Jeff.
I saw funny. It in there and I thought... Okay, what is this going
to be? And I used to think that about Batman, but then Yeah, like, the chorus is a bit weird. Batman, Batman, Batman. But it's actually just a song about Batman, but also relating to Jaden Smith himself, in that he's rich, but now he's...
I had
stuff going on.
I had the Gucci-related PTSD hearing that. God. I was thinking, oh, is this just going to be one word for the entire song and nonsense? Like, but
panda?
It wasn't.
Like, well,
I was thinking,
panda, panda,
panda.
What is it with like modern rap and just having like woo or skirt or whatever? Thing is, Jaden only uses skirt like
skrut.
No. There's a difference between skrut and skirt. All right.
Oh, okay.
But I think he only uses skirt like once in the album, and then and when he does use it, he's using it in a self-aware fashion. Like, he's making fun of the people who use skirt because he's like, he's like drunk at that point of the song or something.
Okay.
That's what I, because like, I've listened to the album about 3 times now. Yeah. Well, I'll probably listen to it a few more.
If it's meant to convey something with a purpose, then I think that's good.
Yeah, or, yeah.
It can also come from a place of pretension. But it could also just be...
Oh, Skirt is born of the SoundCloud rapper generation. Like, it's
I mean,
that.
Some people, like, when you listen to music, there are vocals that just make noise because they feel that there's a sound in
them. If you listen to old Eminem songs, he's got plenty of that going on in the background.
Oh, I mean, like...
But he does it with a purpose. Like, all the sounds, like, relate to the lyrics.
Even if you listen to singers, like, there's so many examples of people just saying, like... Baby, baby,
exactly.
Baby.
You can just use and yeah. Woo! You can just use that stuff to go with the music. Like just be a melody. Just keep going. Like yeah.
There's lots
like
of yeah kind of yeahs and yeah. na-nas in music. Yeah. That's completely fine. But also in a lot of those cases, they're using their voice more instrumentally. They're just trying to make a musical sound. While it is in rap, you could argue that there's less validity there. By them making a sound, but if it's just about them expressing a feeling and they make a noise that they feel is appropriate, then go for it.
Speaking of music, last week, MGMT released a new album, the first in like 4 years. Their last album was in 2013, and now they've released a new album called Little Dark Age, and it is great. It's much more pop-oriented than their previous albums. It's still got the classic MGMT surrealism and psychedelia, but it's a lot more, like, funky and pop-oriented.
Well, pop isn't necessarily a dirty word. Pop like, can certainly
no,
be
exactly.
abused.
Pop, but pop usually just refers to popular music, the kind of music that is just, like...
That people are listening to.
You can dance to, but it's not dance music, you know what I mean? There's a lot more MGMT songs that you could dance to in this album. Like, if you listen to, like... Time to Pretend or Electric Feel from their first album. It doesn't really feel like you could dance to many of them.
I'd jig to Electric Feel.
Yeah, but you wouldn't really go out into a dance floor and like dance with other people to Electric Feel.
I wouldn't do that
but
anyway.
You could
Nick.
Definitely do that to Little Dark Age.
Have you seen me dance?
Yes, I have.
Is it terrible?
You look like Elaine Benes.
you look like a middle-aged woman.
No, I mean, like, you look like her when she's dancing. Have you not seen Elaine Benes dance?
Oh, probably.
She's like this. She's like...
Nick is contorting his body, throwing his limbs in every which way.
I look like The Exorcist because I'm attempting to dance like Elaine Benes from the from the classic 90s sitcom Seinfeld.
Oh, that's not what I'm familiar with. Can you tell me about Seinfeld?
Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing.
It's not!
Yes, it is!
It's not! They said it's a show about how a comedian gets his material. You're perpetuating a myth. You're spreading myths about the Jewish people. If you burp into my brand spanking new microphone one more time, I'm going to circumcise you.
We forgot to mention. New microphone, ladies and gentlemen. New microphone.
If you happen to notice how this one doesn't sound like shit.
Like the third episode.
This isn't an unlistenable nonsense.
Well, the third episode isn't unlistenable, but it is absolutely the worst audio quality I have on my YouTube channel.
It proves difficulty.
Yeah.
If you would willingly subject your ears to that, I applaud you.
The
thing
is, it's awful audio quality, but the content is enough to like...
The content is passable.
Yeah, it's funny.
Much like your Bob Dylan impersonation.
Yeah, well, yeah, we still need to work on doing a full cover. We should work on doing a full cover of Bob Dylan playing Mad World.
I don't know if we should.
We should work on a full cover for it. I put the pinned comment. For
I did see that. He said, "Give me a yee or a yee."
You should.
And no one answered. They went, "I don't want to stand on either side of the fence." Of
you
this.
Should reply to that.
I was gonna go yee.
I'm surprised Cat Lover didn't say yee.
Yeah, Cat Lover, step up your
or
game.
Or like Cuba Games, or literally any of the extra subscribers I have now.
One of the 3 people that listen to this goddamn show.
Yeah, well, see, I've recently gotten a new influx of subscribers recently.
Yeah, okay, we need to talk about
this. We need to talk about this. I'm honestly, I'm both surprised, happy, and not surprised at the same time as the fact that we recorded a video called r/Spubby:TopPosts of All Time.
Yeah.
And it's just a video of me. It's like literally just 6 minutes of Ben and I laughing at a subreddit.
Yeah, well, the thing is...
And it is now my most popular video.
Is it, has it really surpassed the,
it's surpassed,
the Justice League drawing video?
Yes, it's at 5.6k views.
I'm really glad that it's that piece of shit.
Yeah, I'm really, I'm still befuddled by the fact that that crap video was my most watched, and it is now r/spubby, and I think it's due to the fact that it is contagious laughter.
A little bit.
And it's also due to the fact that this kind of video, this, like, people looking at subreddits and laughing at them, has become popular recently. And
largely in vogue. There was a particular commenter in there who got really quite salty and had pointed out that it is part of riding the wave. And it wasn't purposeful in the sense of going, dude, we're gonna get so many views, we're gonna get so much
buzz. Exactly. We just did this because we saw these videos and we're like, oh, that looks like fun, let's give it a try. And then we were just like, well, we wanted to give it a try because it's kind of like that Google feud video we did. It's just us laughing at nonsense for about 17 minutes.
Yeah, but that is an enjoyable thing. Like, when people seem to lose it is certainly enjoyable. Like, I'm a big fan of Game Grumps and watching
Aaron Hansen only plays
especially.
Just because of whenever
watching
they lose
them lose their minds and just become hysterical over something which can be quite benign, I think is enjoyable. And so looking at this, at sort of the shit posts that is Spubby, had potential. And also there was a lady who had gone through and done multiple videos.
Yeah.
Many videos looking at
Shout out to Hey Beeps. She's a funny lady.
Hey Beep.
Beeps.
Hey Beeps.
That sounded like a clap. It didn't sound like I slapped you in the face.
No, that wasn't very good.
Let's try it again. That still sounded like a clap. Why am I so good at clapping all of a sudden?
You're a master.
Was that the Roblox oof sound?
Oof! That's
my Mario. Oof!
There was, I think that it may have been something that I ranted to Nick about at one point. The point where I ranted to Nick about my feelings of low effort content, which seems to do incredibly well.
Because
there are certain things on this channel where we...
Not even just on this channel, on YouTube as a whole.
Right, so there are some things on this channel which Nick and I actually put effort into, funnily enough, although some of it seems like we just sort of open our mouths and noises come out.
Mm.
There are some things that we plan and write scripts for and film, and they will get, like, this 30 or 40 views.
Like the sketches and the Untitled Science Show videos.
Yeah, particularly Untitled Science Show is what I'm thinking.
Well, they've both got at least 100 views, so that's good.
Some of them do.
No, both of them. There's only two.
Really?
Untitled Science Show episodes.
Oh, okay, well. And then with the podcast, some of them have done better than others, and part of it we feel is attention, and part of it's the algorithm or whatever.
I think it's also the fact that, you know,
the algorithm's like this straw man.
The first episode will obviously have the most views because it's the oldest one.
That is true. Yeah, one just they just have more time to accrue views.
And who knows? Maybe people are just listening to it on iTunes instead of YouTube.
Potentially.
And annoyingly, iTunes doesn't let you have a look at, like, how many views your podcast has or how many people have subscribed to your podcast. Mm. So I have absolutely no idea how many people
listening
are listening.
If you're listening on iTunes,
to it.
Let us know.
Yeah. Send us an email at tempuncles@gmail.com or tweet at us at tempuncles.
Right. So there are some things that we actually think about before we do.
Yeah. I mean, even with the podcast, we kind of do just, like, we kind of put a few dot points together and We rely on our improvisational skills to try and haphazardly link those points together.
And editing. The power of editing is glorious.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Right, so there are some things that we try for, and then there are others where we just sort of open our face holes and hope that something humorous comes out. And
like
Spubby was one of those.
Yeah.
And to an extent, Google Feud, but that didn't really get the attention that
I think Spubby... it's due to the fact that it's 17 minutes long.
Well, Spubby is even worse in the sense that all of the comedy comes from the fact that we found it funny. So we didn't create any of the content.
Well, I think the humor also comes from the content that we're laughing at.
Yeah,
like,
so the fact
funny.
That it's all content that came from somewhere else, and we looked at it, and we laughed at it, and we scrolled down the page, and we repeated that.
It's
and
a form of...
That was found to be excellent.
It's a form of reaction video.
Yeah, it's exactly... It's a reaction video on the face of it. It's not quite like Jinx level, where it's just his face in the corner. It could just be a fucking still image of some dude in a beanie eating chips and going...
Yeah,
this
there's
was,
a difference
this was
between...
a little more lively than that, but but there was really...
It's the same principle.
It was very much a low effort... post, and that bothers me because there are because it was such a low effort thing and received so much more attention
than anything,
than
else.
Everything else. And I think, not that I'm
thinking, not complaining that the fact that it got so many views. I have no right to complain about the fact that this video is doing well.
Because you've benefited quite well.
I've benefited quite well from this video in the fact that, well, I mean, and I'm not at all embarrassed by this video. I'd probably go back a few years from now. I'll probably go back and watch it and find it quite humorous.
Oh, but, yeah, I'll send it to people sometimes, yeah. And I don't usually, you know, share a lot of the content that I'm featured in.
Which you probably should, just because, like, you'd be like, hey, I made a thing. Please give it a go.
When I do the podcast, I'll link it to people that I know that actually fucking listen to it. But I find it hard to reconcile the low effort with the huge outpour versus the
high effort with the low output.
Versus the higher effort with the lower attention. And it's not that I'm thinking, oh, Untitled Science Show is just an amazing piece of theatre, it's great, you should all patronize it, because I don't think that. Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Why did this video get more views when we put less effort into it, whereas the video that we put more effort into it, like, for example, the first episode of Untitled Science Show took 2 weeks to edit.
Yeah. It's like
that was more of an on and off thing, that like had maybe 2 or 3 hours out of those days to edit it. But
well, it's
still.
Like when people sit there and lament, like, why is this fucking Justin Bieber so famous when, like, people don't listen to Led Zeppelin anymore? And it's like, well,
I mean, it probably has something to do with the fact that Justin Bieber is new.
Yeah, yeah, but it's part of, like, you people go, oh, well, there's this artistic guy that I know that lives down the street, and he's just so deep, man, he's excellent, but, like, fucking, like, Drake... But
there's obviously a merit to artistic content that has a deeper meaning to it. But also,
yes, Spubby already has an audience.
But there's also a reason for making low effort content for the purpose of entertainment.
Yeah,
like I'm not gonna at all lament about the fact that there are movies that are purely made just for money or made purely for entertainment. Just because if they bring joy to the audience, then who am I to judge? But like. It's just a shame that those do better than the ones like Blade Runner 2049, the movies that are, they have more effort put into them both in the pre, post, and during production. And then also like the fact that they have such a deeper meaning to them, but they don't do as well as movies like Thor Ragnarok that is purely made for entertainment.
Yeah, well, you can think about it for like in terms of ease of consumption.
Yes.
So if you use like a food analogy, because we never talk about food. Ha! So, if you looked at, like, fucking Twisties or something, you could eat millions of them. You could
literally.
You could just open it up and pour it into your holes and just demolish them. But then, and as a result, they're extremely popular, they sell well, they make lots of money.
Yeah.
Then if you look at something like a sea urchin, there are some people that have really refined taste, or really specific taste, a mature taste, if you will.
Yes.
But they don't sell as many sea urchins, and they don't go to as wide an audience as, say, Twisties does, because it's harder for people to get into sea urchins than it is.
And it's also
Twisties.
Harder to prepare sea urchins.
Yeah. So if you look at, right, we've released 2 episodes of Untitled Science Show, and we're writing a couple now.
We're writing two more at the moment.
To finish the first season.
We want to have 4 episodes for the first season.
And it's really sort of off the wall. Some of it's funny and some of it's purposely not. Some of it's meant to be a little bit disturbing. Some of it's meant to be hard to follow because it's
surreal humor.
Yeah, it's surrealist. It's non-naturalistic on purpose versus like two idiots looking at Ifrif. Oh, so much easier to look at Spubby than it is to look at like fucking Alan Resnick.
Yeah, although I'm sure something like Live Forever As You Are Now with Alan Resnick is much more general audience consumable than something like, say, unedited footage of a bear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or even This House Has People In It.
Mm.
This House Has People In It is probably, like, the weirdest thing he's made, I'd say.
Yeah?
Oh, especially like, considering the fact that it's not just that 11-minute short film.
No.
There is a website that is connected to that that short film.
The audio visual company.
And then if you type in the password and the username and password in the top of that website, you are now given access to over 2 hours of extra content.
Mm. And it's not necessarily stuff that's there for entertainment. It's there for context and it's there to deepen the world.
Well, not even. It's a puzzle made with audio and visual content.
Mm.
And it's your job as the viewer, if you see fit, to watch everything and connect the pieces.
That's way too effortful for most people. And it's not... And it's,
which is why Nightmind exists.
Yeah, it's not like a... This generation doesn't want to put effort into enjoying the... It's like, no one wants to do that.
Mm.
Or at least very, very few people want to do that.
We're pampered by a leisure... concentrated society.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, most people want things in...
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. If you have such a low-effort lifestyle, you're having a good time.
Yeah, well, you know, most people would prefer to have the most ease of movement and the most ease of access to most things, and that's perfectly fine, because people are busy. People are busier now than they've ever been.
Yeah.
Most people would have, you know, one job, they would go and they would, you know, They would sow the seeds for their chickens, and they would go home and they would smoke a pipe, and that would be the day.
The fact that I have this YouTube channel makes me more busy than I would be if I didn't have the YouTube channel.
Yes.
Yeah. See, if I just went to school to study film, then I would only be doing that. But because of the fact that I have this YouTube channel, I'm now taking up extra time to make content for it.
Yes.
And, one thing I was going to say earlier that I didn't get a chance to, because we went off on that conversation, was like, I'm not at all complaining about the fact that Spubby got so many views and that I got a whole lot more subscribers over this video. Like, I'm amazed. I'm like genuinely happy.
I think it's great.
At the fact that, like, I've been struggling to hit 300 subscribers for like the last 2 years.
Mm.
And now, because of one video, I went from 297, like, I was so close to hitting 300. I went from 297 to 360 in one day.
Yeah.
And now I'm at 400 and, I think, 50-something at the moment.
Mm.
Possibly. I might even only be at 430-something, but still. Like, I recently made that video where I celebrated getting 420 subscribers.
You got
because,
the weed number.
Because ha-ha marijuana. But, yeah. I think the only thing I'm complaining about is the fact that these extra 100 and so subscribers haven't been checking out, like, my other stuff. Like, I'm looking at the numbers of views, and they seem to have gone up maybe one or two times, like maybe a few of those extra subscribers are actually watching my other content and not just hitting replay on the Spubby video.
Yeah,
but of course, a lot of them have probably subscribed to the channel because of the Spubby video, thinking, oh, maybe this is what he does.
And then they saw that there isn't, it's not all r/expanddong.
Yeah, exactly. Which we might do in the future. And the thing is, like, how many of those people would actually listen to this and hear me complaining about the fact that they're not watching our other videos?
So, well, I would say that the audience that is attracted to Eef is not necessarily the same audience that wants to listen to a 45-minute plus podcast.
Yeah, or even
those are two different.
Or
audiences.
Even just watch Tuesdays with Nick. They're very different. Yeah. Like, they might be the same type of comedy, but they're very different kinds of content.
Yes, yeah. I would agree.
I would also recommend that if you are new to the channel and you're somehow listening to this podcast for whatever reason, that you please don't go and check out my stuff that is older than 2014, please. Except maybe the comedy sketches.
Well, what happened in prior to them? What did?
It's just the fact that my content is just not as good before 2014.
Oh yeah, well, it's expected.
I mean,
it's not
like I didn't put any effort into it, but it's just the fact that, like, and also back then, those were the days when it was culturally acceptable for a boy to watch My Little Pony, for example, which I did, but that was because it was a good show. I stopped watching it not because of the stigma that was the brony culture.
I mean, the plot is so rich.
It was fun, entertaining, well-written kids content, and I thought, oh well, more people are watching this, I'll give it a go, and I enjoyed it, but then it started to go downhill. I didn't watch it because I didn't stop watching it because of the fact that there was this social stigma going against bronies. I stopped watching it because the show just stopped being interesting to me.
Just think about it. Hannibal Lecter, Lou Bloom.
Oh, shut up.
Rainbow Dash.
Shut up. Okay. I'm not saying it's a high art. I'm saying it was fun entertainment.
Yeah, I know,
okay?
I know.
And it was easy to access because all the episodes were uploaded to YouTube.
Oh.
It was easier to watch than something good like Adventure Time or Regular Show.
It's like Twisties.
Yes, exactly.
MLP is Twisties.
Yeah, I don't think the episodes are still... I don't even think they make
hashtag
the show anymore.
Hashtag delicious
so.
Cheesy ponies.
Hashtag dwarf talk.
Delicious cheesy dwarves.
I should now accentuate the fact that I do not watch My Little Pony anymore.
Did it go downhill?
It did. That's why I stopped watching
it. The first season was just so much better, and then it got like it. They sold out, man. It's just not the same anymore. It's like big. It's like the Bing Bong Bingus. And like,
I would argue with you, but that is actually a genuine like thing that happened. The show became way too commercial.
They just did Bep Zoople too many times, and I couldn't watch it anymore. And then,
well, exactly. It's the reason why like you and I were talking about the Big Bang Theory last episode, and the fact that we stopped watching it because it became crap. So
yeah, well, and also
we grew up.
Yeah.
That's the other reason why I stopped watching the show. It's another reason why I don't watch, like, I'm trying to think of cartoons that I used to watch that I stopped watching because of maturity. I think Ben 10 is one of them.
Yeah.
I could probably go back and watch the original series, but I probably wouldn't watch, I stopped watching the newer versions of Ben 10 just because, one, I think I got a bit too old for it.
Yeah.
I lost interest in the show.
Hmm.
And you wouldn't at all make fun of me for saying that because it's Ben 10 and not My Little Pony.
Yeah. Well, that's the
so
thing.
Shut
is,
up,
yeah.
bitch.
I'll
slap you. Ah! Why are we talking about this on length for this podcast?
Because it's important.
I have other points to
make. I don't care! It's important
We're talking about maturity in art, and that's like, you know, it's a show that when you get older, you just stop watching because it's a show made for kids.
Well, that's a big part
and
of it.
And teenagers.
Is that you're being a cartoon, people look at it and go, right, I'm going to look at it at face value, I'm going to look at the aesthetics and decide if I like it. And they go, ew, horses, yay. And so if you were older and you went, okay, I'm really going to give the show a go, you would probably look into it and go, hey, this has got themes that I identify with and I enjoy it. So I'm not one of those people, I didn't really watch it.
Yeah.
However, I imagine that a lot of the adult viewers that watched it, or older male viewers that watched it, sort of went, hey, this is not bad. But
and then there was the...
Considering it's a cartoon and therefore supposed to be for children, a young boy will look at it and go, shit.
Exactly. But the thing, and just another thing that happened was that it's one of those shows that just had... The fan base got so big that it then became problematic, and then you had people that started making... art about the show, or they made like creepypastas, or they made they made the fandom hard to access for the show's original target audience, which was small female children.
It became so big that it was then ruined, as a lot of things are,
especially cartoons. It happens a lot to cartoons
because you have both a really juvenile audience that will fight tooth and nail for some sort of thing, and there are a lot of people that make really just sort of immature
about this on the Proto podcast, and that a lot of the times fandoms get so big that they become problematic.
Like the fucking
Rick and Morty
situation.
Yeah, Rick and Morty. Glad it didn't happen to Cuphead. I'm so glad. Cuphead's audience was almost about to hit the tipping point, and then it kind of faded a bit.
I think
and I'm
Cuphead,
happy for
Cuphead
that.
Is protected. In a couple ways, and the fact that it is so stylized in a 30s way that younger people might look at it and go, eh.
No.
And also the fact that it is quite difficult, that they might try and play it and not get into it. So it's not, it has the barrier of difficulty of consumption. So people, has a little bit more difficulty in getting as huge as, say, Minecraft, which is full of 12-year-olds, and like Fortnite. Like, I got on Fortnite to play with my brother. And I've gotten a server without any friends of his, and it was just full of children. It was just, hi, do you want to go to Dusty? And I went, oh, this is the audience. And so with Cuphead, it's probably not full of 12-year-olds. So those are all things that are subject to maturity. In a lot of cases, juvenility and puerility are things that can ruin things, or at least make things more susceptible to being ruined. And Nick and I had been thinking a lot about maturity because we'd...
that one song that is from MGMT's new album that specifically made you want to talk to me about this kind of thing was When You Die by MGMT, which is a song that is about death. Like, it is just a song about death.
And so, I feel that there... This is something...
It is actually, like, despite the happy-sounding nature of the song, the lyrics are quite bleak.
Oh, yeah.
When you die, words don't do anything. It's permanently night, and we won't do anything. We'll all be laughing with you when you die. You know, that's the chorus.
I actually have a lot of respect for songs that that appear to be happy, but are actually not.
Like Anything by Lily Allen.
I haven't heard a lot of her stuff.
Listen to LDN. It's a song that sounds really happy, but it's about like like the shittiness of the London streets, like people murdering each other or people like cheating and robberies and shit. Something smells like burnt toast. Someone burnt toast in the other room.
That's
we need to get a likely studio to do this podcast, but we're not the Game Grumps, so we can't afford things.
Gamma Grimper.
You should be thankful that we even decided to get a new microphone. How much was this microphone, baby?
$170.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Well, there was one that was $120 that okay. was sort of okay.
Yeah.
And then for another $50, I got this one. And yeah, like I spoke to a guy at length about it. And he said, look, there's this one, which is really quite good. And yeah. you'll use it for ages. And then there was one that was $50 less that was, you know, sort of eh. Yeah. So I got that one.
Okay. But at least it sounds better. Hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Well, I needed... Hopefully. I wanted to get, you know, an audio interface and then possibly a mic. Yeah. Just for my own musical purposes, and this gave me a reason to drop that sort of cash yeah. without feeling like I was just wanking myself yeah. off.
And
with
you
money.
Also have a disposable income now, so
I yeah
because you have a job, but you don't have like a car or like a
not
like
yeah something. I'm saving up for a car.
Yeah, you don't need anything, like you don't have bills, you don't have a car, you don't have a daily commute that you have to actually put money into. So you have like you have a job, and then you can just use this money for your own benefit.
Right. So
but that's a good thing about like maturity is that like we now can make more high quality podcasts because of this podcast in itself. We made it because it's a slightly more mature version of sitting in front of a camera and talking about things. Genre of the art form podcast in and of itself is like a fairly mature kind of thing, in that like when people say like, oh, I have a podcast, or these people have a podcast, it seems like it's slightly more professional, you know?
Oh, I would say that it's a form that is aided most by maturity. Like, you could have one that's all like, oh, hey, but it would probably wear thin really quickly.
Like, there's a big difference between radio shows and podcasts.
Yes. Well, because radio show, you flick past it, and if there's some, like, that someone makes an outrageous joke, maybe you're more likely to pay attention.
Norm MacDonald.
Oh, maybe if you hear Eddie like call Adam Goods and then maybe you'll listen.
Ben said the N-word!
Talking about mature things, I had this perception, whether it is real or not, that when people aim for darker themes, that they are more likely to be applauded just for the fact that they are dark, as opposed to them being artistic pieces.
Isn't always true.
It's not a rule.
For example, if it's in an art form that is generally applauded for being quite lighthearted, like the superhero movie, sometimes you'll get films like The Dark Knight, a movie that people love. I think part of the...
Part of that is Heath Ledger.
Part of the immense hype that movie gets is due to the performances of Heath Ledger.
Both the performance and the fact that he died. If Heath Ledger hadn't died, I would say that it wouldn't have been as popular. It still would have been heralded as a good performance.
Yeah, and it still would have been heralded as a good movie. But yes. Like, something that's equally as dark, if not more dark and depressing and realistic...
Mm.
Despite having a character that can fly and shoot lasers from his eyes, is Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, one of my favorite superhero movies. And I'm talking about the ultimate cut. The theatrical cut is worthless. Only watch the 3-hour cut of the movie.
Do you really think that there is such a huge difference between the two?
Yes.
Like a night...
It's just the fact that the theatrical cut exists is just... Like, it shouldn't. There is absolutely no need for it to exist when you have the ultimate
cut. What is it that the theatrical... cut does that is so bad?
It eliminates a few plot lines and a few character motivations that actually make the film make sense.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only does it just remove some scenes that like seem superfluous, it also rearranges some of the scenes in order to make those plot line cuts make a little bit more sense, despite the fact that they don't really. Of course, I still enjoyed the film when I went and saw it in theaters, but
you have an appreciation for all things super anyhow.
Well... sort of, but
not a lover of all things.
Oh, well,
super,
yeah,
but
appreciation. But yeah, I think it also came down to the fact that I felt like a kid when I went and saw that movie in theaters, seeing just Batman and Superman together on the screen, seeing like these references to Aquaman, Flash, and Cyborg on screen. All this stuff just kind of made me feel like a kid again. But then, as I watched the movie more times, namely the ultimate cut of the movie, I appreciated it more for its artistic value and for its writing and editing and cinematography and all that stuff. And I've seen the movie multiple times. I've seen it like maybe 5 or 6 times now. And I love it. And I'm... I think a lot of people who dismissed the film because of its bad ratings...
Yeah.
A lot of people did that. Like, see, because this movie didn't do well because of the fact that they released the theatrical cut...
They saw that people said it was bad and therefore they...
Exactly. It was bad. Bandwagon hatred is something that happens a lot. People like to think that it doesn't, but it happens a lot. As soon as something is given bad ratings, you'll immediately get people who haven't seen the film...
With an opinion of it.
With an opinion of it, exactly. Yeah. And it also happens with, like, a movie that that just has a social stigma of it being like, why did they make this? Yeah. Or, like, what is the point of this? Like, the Ghostbusters remake. Now, I'm not saying that that movie's good, right?
But and it's
that,
probably that it, not as it, bad.
Exactly. I'm not saying that it's good and that it doesn't deserve some of the hate it gets. But the thing is, it's a bad movie, right? Mm. But I 100% disagree with all of the fans who went and gave it a 1 out of 10 on IMDb before the movie came out. Before having seen the movie.
That's poor form.
And the thing... And the people have been doing that for Black Panther now.
Really?
Which is absolutely abhorrent. No one should be doing that for any movie. Mm. Give it... I completely disagree with anyone who subscribes to the idea that, oh, I can judge a movie without having seen it. Of course, there's two different kinds of judging a movie without seeing it. There's the one where you judge it going, that doesn't look like the kind of movie I would enjoy, so I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
And there's the kind of person that goes, I haven't seen that movie, but people say it's bad, so I don't like it. Or I don't like the look of this movie, so it's a bad movie.
I think it's perfectly okay to disagree with the synthesis of a film. For example, when I talk about the new Star Wars films, as I'm wont to do, I disagree.
I'm surprised we've gone this long without talking about
really,
Star Wars.
I'm really impressed with us that it's taken us an hour to get to Star Wars. So, I disagree with the fact that they decided to make more. However, having not seen, say, number 9, I cannot make a comment on the quality of number 9, if I disagree with the fact that it exists.
Okay.
So you can look at it and go, Ghostbusters was perfect. I don't need another Ghostbusters. How do you just...
People like to forget that Ghostbusters 2 exists.
Yeah.
That was crap.
You can disagree and go, I don't want... Harold Ramis, I love you. People can do that.
Yeah.
But I think it would be unjust to go, I'm giving it a 1. I haven't seen it because you haven't seen the film. Like, you don't know the quality of the film.
I can say that I don't want to watch The Greatest Showman because it just doesn't look like a film I would enjoy. But I'm not going to go and say, this doesn't look like the kind of movie I enjoy, therefore it's a bad movie.
If you say it is a bad movie and you haven't seen it, well, you're an idiot.
But if you go with a kind of... But the thing is, I'm not judging it because it's a musical or because... Like, I'm going by this very specific movie. I also don't like people who judge a movie because of the genre that it's part of.
Yeah.
Like, going and just immediately dismissing a movie because it's a romantic comedy. Or immediately dismissing a movie because it's sci-fi. Like...
Yeah.
Because of the genre that it's in, like...
As if anything from that genre is automatically bad.
Yeah, exactly. Like, of course you can dismiss the movie because of that specific movie. You could watch the trailer and say, that doesn't look like a good movie, I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
You can't go, this looks like a bad movie, therefore it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
Of course, like, I'm still finding myself watching trailers for bad movies and going, oh, this looks crap. But for anything with Adam Sandler in it.
Pixels.
Well,
the thing is,
immediately
Adam
Sandler, watching the trailer. Yeah. Well, the thing is, when I watch the trailer for Pixels, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give this a chance.
I was gonna watch it anyway because it looked ludicrous.
I was gonna watch it because, well, see, I was looking forward to it until the second trailer came out, and then I'm like, okay, this just looks like an Adam Sandler movie.
And I had seen the short film. The film was inspired by, and I liked it.
That's the thing about like maturity in art is that like you can make. Like Adam Sandler, there was a point in time where it seemed like, oh, maybe he'll start making more mature films, and then immediately right after he'd finished Funny People, he started with Grown Ups, which just went back. I'm not saying Grown Ups is a bad movie. You like that movie, don't you?
I actually have a really soft spot for Grown Ups 1 and 2.
I liked the opening of the movie where they're all just riffing on each other for like 10 minutes.
Dumb.
But
it's a stupid film.
I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
I think it's a bad movie.
I think they're
I've seen it.
I think they're enjoyable. Like it's part of like, I think they're sort of low effort, but I think that they're fun.
Yeah. But as I was saying, is that like, it seemed like, because he made a movie like Punch Drunk Love, he made Click.
Click is excellent.
Click is good. And then he made Funny People, which is also quite good. Mm. And then he made Grown Ups, and then went back into the pit of doing movies like Big Daddy and like movies like Jack. I think he's currently in his like worst spot of his career. Movies like Jack and Jill, Pixels, The Ridiculous Six, movies like this. Mm. He's currently in like the worst spot of his career.
I'd be curious to know what like how many of these things came from him. Whether he approached the studio and said, "Look, I have an idea.
I think
I'm gonna be in a thing and like video games," or whether a studio approaches him and says, "Look, we want you to be in a film because it'll say Adam Sandler on it, and we'll make money." And he'll go, "Well, now I've got a
now." Nowadays, he's currently going into that point where putting Adam Sandler on a movie won't immediately get it a million tickets. So,
well, the thing is, because of his reputation now as both lovable historical goof and also terrible filmmaker, people want to see what is Adam Sandler doing.
Yes, there is. There
is he
there
making
is
a return?
This...
Is he making a
yes,
just a
there
shit?
There is this thing that I do not approve of, is people and going and seeing bad movies when they know that they're going to be bad in theaters.
Because it supports the film.
Because it supports the film. No. You've got people going and seeing the Emoji Movie in theaters.
Yeah.
Not realizing that
you're
paying for the
money.
Ticket,
yeah.
You're giving them money.
You're
maybe it's
the
more forgivable
movie.
After the like after about 5 weeks, because in the opening weekend the studio gets like the majority of the ticket money. Mm. But after I think about 5 weeks, the money is split 50-50 between the theater and the studio.
Okay,
I think it's about 4 or 5 weeks. It's then split 50-50.
Well, there's an interesting point.
Which is why the opening weekend always makes such a big deal, is because that's when the studio gets the most amount of money from ticket sales.
Well, it also drums up all the attention. If something opens poorly, people aren't going to talk about it after 4 weeks.
Yes.
But if it open up with a bang, people will continue to talk
sometimes
about
a movie can open poorly and then have more people go see it afterwards, like Justice League did. Which was surprising, because Justice League got very mixed reviews. It didn't get great reviews, it didn't get poor reviews, it got very mixed reviews.
Oh, mixed is even, well, that's sort of controversy. So then people will go, oh, well, I heard, or some people said this and some people said that. I need to find out for myself.
Well, Batman v Superman also got... And people like to say that it got awful reviews, but actually, when you look at them, the reviews were actually very mixed.
Mm.
But with Rotten Tomatoes' shitty algorithm, it put a lot of the mixed reviews as a thumbs down.
Right.
Therefore, putting the overall percentage down to 27%, when realistically, something like Metacritic gave it a 47%, gave it a 47 out of 100, which is closer to 50%, which means mixed reviews.
Yeah.
Metacritic doesn't take the review and put like a 5 out of 10 as a thumbs down. It will put the 5 out of 10 as a 5 out of 10.
Right.
And then go with... So Metacritic is actually... When you're looking at critic reviews, Metacritic is a better place to look at than Rotten Tomatoes. IMDb lets literally anyone... like, as long as you have an account on Facebook, Google, Amazon, or IMDb, you can put a rating in. You can make a review. Look at... You know the meme... Somebody touch on my spaghetti!
Yeah, I'm familiar with
that. That came from a short animated film called The Three Bears.
Yeah.
If you look at the IMDb page for this short animated film called The Three Bears, made in 1939, you'll get the majority of the reviews as memes.
Yeah.
I hate this. IMDb should be kept away from memes and people giving a movie a 1 out of 10 when they haven't seen it. IMDb originally had integrity.
Yeah.
Now, it is just a place for information.
So, your main gripe is with frivolous reviews as a whole.
Yes.
Now, there was
I think IMDb is no longer a place to look for in a quality of a film.
No.
Now, it is just there to be a Wikipedia for a film. It's just there to collect information. Trivia, technical specs, cast and crew, all that stuff. That is the only reason why I look at IMDb anymore.
So you can go
of course,
for the facts.
I still give movies my out of 10 on IMDb, but I don't use the actual ratings on IMDb as a measure. I like to use the ratings to keep track of what movies I have seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll go to IMDb for the facts, but you can no longer trust their opinions.
Not really.
Okay.
Sometimes it's very specific genre-wise as well. Horror movies generally just get worse reviews than most other genres. You can look at a movie in the horror genre and it's got a 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad movie.
Oh,
because it's a horror movie.
Well, being the scary is incredibly subjective, because there are some people that might feel that it was too scary, look at the, and didn't like it, or they felt that it wasn't scary enough.
You can go to the reviews. You liked The Babadook, didn't you?
I felt that for the most part it was really well made.
Yeah, so you can if you look at like some of the top reviews, top negative reviews for The Babadook, you'll get people saying like, "Oh, there was no monster in the movie. It wasn't scary. Therefore it's shit."
Yeah.
That's why I don't trust IMDb.
Oh, okay? That's the thing. Yeah, my main gripe with it was with the monster.
So now I wanted to talk about Shape of Water.
Right.
That's a movie that I saw a few days ago. And I also saw The Phantom Thread. I mean, it is much more mature than Paul Thomas Anderson's previous film, Inherent Vice.
Mm.
But, if you look at his filmography, they all look like Paul Thomas Anderson films. He could be making a stoner comedy mystery film, or he could be making an elegant drama about dressmaking, and they look like they're made by the same person.
Is it really about dressmaking?
Yep.
So it's not just, like, themed, it's about the construction of fabrics?
Well, that is a main, like, that's like, it's not just a background part, like, it is actually part of this plot a few times.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a beautiful film, though. Like, Paul Thomas Anderson is a great director. He has not made a single bad movie yet, so...
Well, I heard that my grandma wanted to see it, so yeah. I could go and see it with my grandma.
Oh, that was funny, that the audience was, like, 95% old people. People over the age of 50.
Yeah.
And I was sat between two old ladies, and there was maybe, like, 3 or 4 people that looked my age in the theatre. And this was the most full I've seen a theater at Cinema Nova. So it was
really
because I saw Shape of Water, it was in the exact same theater that they showed Phantom Thread a week later, because it was Cinema 2. And the reason I saw these movies is because on Mondays I finish school at 12:30.
Yeah.
And on Mondays at Cinema Nova, tickets are only $7.
Yeah.
So I go after I finish uni, I go and see a movie at Cinema Nova. And that's probably what I'm going to be doing from now on.
That sounds like a really good...
It sounds like a great idea, because of the fact that I'm a film student and I love movies. I think this coming Monday, I'm going to go see Call Me By Your Name. Which, by the time this podcast actually comes out, I'll already have seen a movie on Monday.
Oh.
But that's funny.
I mean, it looks good. Well, it looks interesting.
It looks good, yeah.
Well, there are a couple of...
But yeah, anyway, I was talking about with Shape of Water.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and it's a... adult fairy tale is something is a phrase I would use to describe this movie.
Is this the blue-haired French lady? Is this film?
You're thinking of Blue is the Warmest Color. That came out 5 years ago. 2013.
Yeah?
Yeah.
God, was it 5 years ago? That's terrible.
Shape of Water is about a mute lady who falls in love with a fish man.
All right.
Some people have used the phrase Abe Sapien fan fiction to describe this movie. I mean, I can see the comparisons. In fact, the Hellboy movies are directed by Guillermo del Toro. But this is a very different movie to Hellboy or Pacific Rim or Blade 2. It's much closer to maybe Pan's Labyrinth. But in just tone and the fact that it's an adult fairy tale, much like Pan's Labyrinth. But it is a beautiful film. Absolutely gorgeous. And it's like, feels... magical.
For some reason I was going to say labyrinth, but I think that that's probably not exactly
it
what we're thinking.
It feels magical, despite the fact that it's set in the 60s. And
magical.
But they use this time period well. Yeah. They actually don't just make it seem like the nostalgic, whimsical 1960s. There's violence. There's racism. There's homophobia throughout the movie. And the movie, it doesn't take you off guard. A character gets two of his fingers bitten off and he's bleeding all over his shirt. But it doesn't feel out of place, despite the fact that this movie has a very whimsical tone to it. The movie, in the opening sequence when the main character is getting ready for her day at work, she hops into the bath, she gets completely naked, and it doesn't feel out of place. And then she starts masturbating in the tub. This is like the only bit that kind of feels a bit jarring.
Mm.
She just kind of reaches down and starts masturbating in the tub. And it's a little bit jarring, but then it happens a second time and it doesn't feel out of place. So it's really interesting seeing this movie with this very whimsical, almost childlike tone to it. Like, sometimes characters start, like, dancing on the stairs or on the couch, like a musical movie of the 1960s or 50s. But then in the next scene, a character will have like a massive slash on his chest. And yet none of this violence, swearing, or sexual stuff feels out of place in the movie.
You know, I find
and it's
that
a really interesting movie to watch because it feels like such a fairy tale. But it's so realistic.
I'm genuinely fascinated in the way that you're talking about it because of the way that you're describing how everything sounds just integrated into it. And, yeah. And in part, the first film that I was thinking about when you started talking was Suburbicon, where you were saying, okay, well, it's set in a different time period in the 60s and that things are integrated, you know, as far as the way that it looks and the way that people behave. It's not... There aren't separate incidents of here is the racist bit, here is the homophobic bit, here is the bit where we highlight how everything is strange.
They don't, like, racism is a bit of a, like, they have a bit of racism kind of, like, as the plot, and the fact that this is a fish-human hybrid, and they're treating him like an animal, despite that it is clearly intelligent.
These are just events that happen to occur during the sequence of the film. It's not, okay, this... here is the racism scene.
Yeah. And it goes to show that, oh, despite the fact that this movie has such a whimsical tone, it's set in the 60s, and the 60s weren't actually that great.
Oh, yeah, well, not for everyone. I'm sure
they have plenty of moments where, like, it won't be, like, a major plot point, but it'll be, like, a passing reference. Some character in power will talk to Octavia Spencer's character. She works in, like, cleaning the place, basically.
Mm.
And they talk about your kind of people. It's not like Suburbicon where, here, racism is bad!
Yeah.
It's more like...
Where they have the cut to the racist scene.
It's more like, hey, you guys remember how racism was really bad in the 60s? It's like a more subtle thing.
It's integrated into it.
Yeah, exactly. It's very well integrated into the movie.
Oh, I would have to see... I highly recommend
Shape of Water. It's probably one of the best movies I've seen this year. And I've only seen like 3 movies from this year. I've seen 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah.
Darkest Hour. The Shape of Water. And Phantom Thread. So that's 4 2018 movies I've seen. Despite the fact that in America, all those movies were released in 2017. So for some people... they're considered a 2017 movie. For me personally, I consider them a 2018 movie. So I'm still working on my top 17 films of 2017 list.
Right.
But I'm not including the movies that I've seen in cinemas this year, despite the fact that maybe on IMDb, it'll say The Shape of Water 2017.
Mm.
So I'm not including The Shape of Water in my 2017 list. I'm including it in my 2018 list. Do we have anything else to talk about? Did you want to talk about A Clockwork Orange? Because you saw that recently, and that movie is about violence.
I don't have stacks to say about A Clockwork Orange, although I did put off seeing it, and it was sitting in my room for
about a month.
Yes,
I let you borrow my copy of it, and you had it for about 2 months before you ended up watching it.
And I watched it, and I have to say that I enjoyed it thoroughly. I thought it was just an excellent piece of cinema.
It's great. And the fact that it uses violence to such an artful form is a testament to its aging well.
That's the thing. I was going to say that the controversy that has surrounded the film... would have changed. I would think that...
It's superseded the film. A lot of people don't watch A Clockwork Orange because it's such an ultra-violent movie. It's one of the most controversial movies of all time. And then you watch it in 2018 or 2017, and it's like, this violence is actually very tame in comparison to movies that come out nowadays.
I'd say
in the actual violence that is shown on screen, it is actually quite tame in comparison to some action movies.
Well...
But the actual context of the violence hasn't changed. It's still very controversial and very
Context can't change because it's still in the film.
Exactly. So but the actual violence and lack... There's not really that much gore in the movie, is there?
Well,
the actual violence... For example, if A Clockwork Orange were made nowadays... Then the scene where he crushes that woman's head with a giant ivory penis.
Yeah.
That scene, there's two ways that The Clockwork Orange would be made.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Let me talk.
Yeah.
In 2017 or 2018, like, you'd either have the weapon wouldn't be a giant cock, or these are just the two changes that would happen because of the fact that we are so sensitive to sexual material nowadays.
Yes.
The weapon probably wouldn't be a giant ivory cock.
No.
And we would probably show her head being, like, smashed.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in that movie, it shows it coming towards the camera, and then they do some smash cutting to these paintings that are on the wall.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
paintings of vaginas, no less.
I agree. I really do agree with what you've got to say. I would say that it holds up. The film holds up in a way that you could re-release it, but back in the day, it was criticized heavily because of its use of violence and because of when it was released
and sexual themes as well.
Yeah, less so. Well, because of when it was released, people were a little more liberal about sex than they probably were now. At least in
because it came out in the 70s.
Yeah, at least in the States. However, nowadays, people tend to be more comfortable with extreme violence. However, I would say that the way that the violence is portrayed in this film is not the same as it is in, say, like, Die Hard. Like, in Die Hard, there is a much larger body count, but they're just people that happen to get blown up.
Yeah.
Buildings that happen to go up. However, in this, there is more malice. There is more... It's more sinister, and I think that...
More intentional.
It's more impactful violence. However, I would say that people...
More specific as well.
Yeah, well, it's about a character that goes, I want to do this particular thing. I want to cause misery to this person, and he does it, and he takes such pleasure in it. And I think that is more disturbing than the types... than the level of body count that could be racked up in a modern film. However, if you did release it today, people would have... such a problem with the amount of sexual content.
Yeah.
It would not... I don't think it would be allowed to be released, or at least it would be released censored.
Yeah.
And the violence would probably be accepted.
Which is why Shape of Water is such a refreshing film, because they approach nudity and sexuality in a way that not a lot of Hollywood movies do. Just the fact that there's actually a lot of nudity in the film is just a... I'm amazed at the fact that I feel refreshed in seeing a movie with nudity in it.
Yeah, well, because there are some... a lot of it is about intent and context. Yeah. And so you can have films that happen to have nudity in it, but not necessarily sex. Well, and that's different. However, if you have something that is... if you think, like, an American-style nudity, where it's about, you know, some seductive slut that gets her tits out, you know, people would go, ugh.
Yeah. Movies are just so much more censored nowadays, I think.
Regarding sex.
And violence. Oh, no, sex and swearing. Namely those two. Because back in the day, a PG-13 movie would be allowed to have a few shits, maybe a few fucks. Yeah. Nowadays, like, you either have to choose between having a few shits sprinkled throughout the film, maybe one or two, or having one F-bomb.
Yeah.
Back to the Future is a movie rated PG, and they say shit all the time in that movie.
Yeah, well, standards are more stringent because they're defined and they're on paper. Because the movie business is so huge, and people will call up if they don't like it, and that can be a risk of loss of money if, you know, fucking Mildred from Oklahoma calls up and says, your film made my child gay or whatever.
Yeah.
They need to put rules down on paper that say you can have this many shits, this many fucks,
absolutely no religious epithets if you're going to put these words in the movie.
But prior, it was probably a little more about
Jesus Christ once.
Yeah, it was probably a little more about feel prior. Yeah. So a person would watch it, or a board would watch it, and they would go, do we feel this warrants an M or an MA or an R?
Yeah.
But instead, now you have to have it and go, well, what are we measuring against?
You have to cut this out if you want it to actually go into cinemas.
Yes.
You know?
Well, for a lot of it's
Like, remove a few frames of this shot and you'll be okay.
Well, it's illegal on a money standpoint, because if you were to sue for something, you have to go, well, what standards does this meet? How do we measure against these standards? As opposed to just going, do you feel it's naughty?
I think just...
does it feel bad?
Like, the world would be a much better place if we weren't so stingy about sex. I hate that I always feel awkward when I'm at home and I'm watching a movie by myself and there happens to be a sex scene in it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I hope mum and dad don't walk in on me watching this.
Yeah, lest they walk past and go, hey, Nicholas, what are you doing?
Yeah. When I was watching Mulholland Drive, there's a scene where Naomi Watts' character masturbates.
Right.
Right? And then I could hear things happening outside the room, and I'm like, oh, they must be getting ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
So I fast-forwarded through the scene so that if they walked in on me, it'd be after this scene. And weirdly, that's the only scene that I would have felt awkward them watching.
Yeah, the fact that there is shame is kind of an indictment on this society.
Like, it's like how I was watching the David Cronenberg film, I think it was called Maps to the Stars, and there's this sex sandwich happening on screen, right? There are three, there's a threesome happening and they're all humping each other. And I'm like, I feel awkward. I'm turning the movie off now because I'm in public and I'm watching this movie, despite the fact that this is like the only scene so far in the 10 minutes of this film that I've watched that actually has this content.
But if there was a guy beating another guy's head in, you'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
If someone saw you watching that, they'd be like, oh, it's an action film, fair enough.
I hate that that's a thing that happens. Like, I always, I feel like, you know, I have to wait till I'm home alone before I can watch Irreversible or watch The Man Who Fell to Earth or watch Eyes Wide Shut. When I could when I could easily just say, I'm going to watch this movie, and it's got a lot of sex in it and a lot of nudity, so I'd like it if you didn't walk in on me watching this movie by myself.
Yeah, but you saying, like, don't come near me while I'm watching the sexy thing.
Yeah, exactly. And
there's
then
shame.
Then there is shame, exactly. I hate that that is a
like, you wouldn't have to be
social stigma against sex in movies, which is why I'm happy that a movie like Shape of Water exists. And it uses nudity and sex without actually being pornographic or sexual in nature. It just uses it so normally. I hope movies become a bit less, like, shameful about showing nudity or sex in a movie.
Do you feel that it's got the potential of normalizing it within art?
If more movies do it, hopefully. If more movies go and follow Shape of Water or movies like that and just go like, oh, this movie has sex in it.
Yeah, well,
but it's not weird.
It's a cultural thing. Like, I watched an
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The French would not at all be bothered by the sex in Shape of Water.
Yeah, like, I watched an excerpt of a film with Michael, and it was from, like, Sweden or something, and it was just about this girl's, like, sexual discovery. You know? And there's, like, a rumour, and there's, like, she, like, has sex with people, and she touches herself in it.
Yeah.
And it's really quite explicit. There's no violence in the film, but the thing is, like, in Europe, there's, you know, few people have guns. Yeah, it's a less violent but more sexy society.
It's like with the release of a movie like Leon the Professional, it's not even overly sexual. It's not, the movie itself isn't actually portraying it sexually.
It's not a sexy film.
It's not a sexy film. It's if anything, it's a violent film. It's an action film, like an art house action film. It just happens to have a female character who is 14 years old, who has fallen in love with a male character who's in his 30s.
Yeah, but that's gross.
But exactly, you say that that's gross. But in France, where they made the movie, it's not. It's a character development of the film.
Oh, well, like,
she doesn't want to have sex with him. She just loves him because he saved her life. Well, it's a sort of Stockholm syndrome in the fact that he's a good guy, though.
Oh, okay.
And she's like, but she's not like.
It would depend on how they portrayed the relationship. Like,
exactly, they don't portray the relationship in like a Lolita-esque kind of way.
Yeah, it was just that she has great affection for this person because he did a service.
Exactly,
for her.
It's not a father-daughter relationship kind of thing though. It doesn't feel like that. But it's not a sexual relationship. It's, if anything, a romantic relationship. But he obviously doesn't want anything to do with it. It's only her that wants.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that creates a dynamic.
But exactly. That kind of relationship would not at all be frowned upon in France or in anywhere in Europe. But
I feel in the States.
But the movie was very shaky when they were releasing it in the States because of that kind of relationship.
Because there may be a perceived pedophilic theme, even if there isn't.
Exactly, which there isn't. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, there's the report that came out in the 60s, and it was like, this report says that 80% of all American males masturbate. What does that say about our society? Yeah. And it was like, well, it shows that 20% of them are liars.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also quite a religious thing too, is that there's obviously all these people, a lot of people grow up with this religious stigma that sex is bad.
Well, you know, I'm John Harvey Kellogg?
No.
Well, John Harvey Kellogg was
Is he the guy who made Kellogg's cereal?
Yeah, he's
he is?
Yeah, he's behind Kellogg's.
Oh, he created cornflakes as a way to stop masturbation.
Yeah, because he believed that a bland cereal would make people less horny, and he's the reason why most American males are circumcised, because he believed that it was a deterrent, that people would stop touching themselves if they were circumcised.
Okay. Well, I think that about does it for this episode. I think it's a good time to end. Ben, do you have any final words?
Ladies, gentlemen, go fuck yourselves. Literally. It's good for you.
Well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. We have been your temporary uncles for the past hour or so. Follow us on Twitter at TempUncles. Send us some viewer emails at tempuncles@gmail.com because we haven't gotten any of those yet.
None.
None. That's about it. You can,
Finished!
We'll see you next episode. Bye.